This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the March 21st edition of the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvanz. We're going to talk all things related to mixed martial arts coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast. Going to have three interviews for you. You're going to hear from Tyson Nam, who's going to be in the main event of Fight Night's Global 86 on April the 1st. We'll talk to him about what's been going on with him as he prepares for this matchup. Also, we'll talk to Callie Robbins, who is going to be fighting on Saturday night on UFC Fight Pass at Invicta FC 28 as she takes on Pearl Gonzalez. So we'll catch up with Callie and talk to her about her matchup coming up on Saturday night. And our other interview is going to be with Caleb Williams, who became a little bit of a viral sensation on Saturday down in South Florida at the event I was calling Shogun Fights, as he won by knockout. You've probably seen that knockout by now, but we'll talk to Caleb Williams here this week on the podcast. Plus, Daniel and I are going to take a look back at UFC Fight Night London, a night of surprises, particularly in the main event, Alexander Volkov shocking the MMA community with a knockout win over Fabricio Werdum. Also want to talk about Cajon's comments. You may know him as Cajun Johnson, but wants to be known as Cajon. I'm saying that right. We'll talk about his comments about some of the MMA fans. Plus, we'll talk about Frankie Edgar returning at April 21st's Fight Night card in Atlantic City against Cub Swanson. Also, we'll talk about who would like to see Darren Till fight in the main event of UFC Fight Night 130. Plus, get into a listener questions as well. Daniel, how you doing, man?
I am still reeling off of a wild, wild weekend. So many crazy things happening. Obviously, March Madness. Both our teams are still in the Sweet 16. What's up? What's up, Jason?
I did not think after I watched FSU get annihilated by Xavier last year, Orlando, did not see that one coming. Of course, if you had told me that Virginia would lose in the opening round, I would have seen that one. It is definitely living up to the madness of March.
Yes, absolutely, and that's enough Florida State basketball talk out of you, you giddy bastard! All right, I get you wild up about Florida State. You know, I guarantee you, 34 years from now on Radio Influence, you're gonna have your own Florida State podcast. It's gonna be 24 hours straight, 7 days a week,
nothing but a Homer podcast.
Yeah. Well, and then you had that wildness. You had the wildness of you being a broadcaster once again for Shogun Fights. That's exciting. We got to delve into that. And of course, like every time there is an under the radar UFC event in some foreign country, this time we were in England, madness ensues. And by God, that was a maddening card. That was a very entertaining card. And obviously with the main event, we had a result that I just did not see coming.
Yeah, of course, everyone had their fight of the night pick being Jan Blachowicz and Jimmy Manoa. That was a great fight to go back and watch, and we're going to get into what we saw there at UFC Fight Night London. You mentioned about it. I did call the Shogun Fights card there on Saturday night, and the guy to remember from that card is Sean Brady. You know, improved to 8-0 in his career, a dominating win over Colton Smith. He sat there, he took Colton down, and he beat up Colton on the ground for three rounds. And, you know, he mentioned after the fight of, you know, how he wants to get into the UFC. And I thought about this on Saturday night after the fights. When you have a fighter that wants to be in the UFC, how much money would it take Bellator to offer that fighter to get that fighter to come to Bellator?
Man, I think it would take $8,000 to fight. I think that's how much it would take for any person to take a Bellator fight. Man,
I think you look at it. He would come in at a 10-10 deal, most likely. Maybe he gets 12-12, maybe 14-14 at the tops. If Bellator comes in at 30,000 to show, 30,000 to win, do you take the Bellator deal?
I think so. But honestly, for Bellator, it's more about – you could even go less on the pay, but short-term on the fight deal. Obviously, for Bellator, you're going to want to eke them up long-term. But more realistically, I think just a major pay upgrade where maybe a fighter sees light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the length of that contract is a more realistic outcome. Because basically what I'm saying is, like, so many of these fighters are making very – I mean – almost all – every fighter is making nothing on the regional scene. So any decent pay, they're going to sign a contract regardless of what their long-term goals are. You just can't give them these arcane contracts that keep them locked up forever. And if you're a Bellator, I think you got to look at it from the perspective of, once we get this guy in our fold, he will want to stay with us.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the confidence you have to have in yourself to re-sign these fighters, be active in that contract negotiation. And then there's the flip side of, they aren't very successful, and it doesn't really matter where they want to go. So honestly, Jason, even though I think most – I would say the vast majority of fighters, when they – day one training, their goal is to make it to the UFC. Oh. You know, no one goes in the gym and thinks, I can't wait to main event Bellator 224 in Hungary. It's all about the UFC, but it's all about the pay. But yeah, I think Bellator should pay a young regional fighter – in his post-fight interview to say, I can't wait to go to Bellator. I think that would be good PR.
It's just something that kind of came to my mind after I heard Sean say it, and I was kind of, you know, wrapping up the night, and I was like, it just a thought that kind of came to my head is, you know, how much would Bellator have to overpay for a prospect? And I would expect that Sean's next fight will be in the UFC. It was interesting, the fact of, you know, he was, you know, he's a Philly fighter and, you know, fighting down in South Florida, had a good contingency of fans. It was a great night of fights. It was the first time I've really had a chance to be around Alliance MMA, which, you know, I think a lot of the articles that are written about Alliance more have to do about the business side. But I can tell you this, man, they put on a great show, great production, in arena for the fans, and it was a great night of fights. I know that, you know, they're going to be doing three more shows down there in South Florida. So I was really impressed with the product that Alliance put together.
So I guess I'll ask you first about the product that you saw there. If you were advising other promotions to kind of what could you pick from Alliance that they did well, what the overall production of the show in-house for the crowd, What do you think are some things regional promotions could take from the fight card?
I'll take one thing that I think is really key, and I've been to, you know, regional shows here in Tampa, and they don't do it. You know, where you have a screen up that, you know, you have a camera on, they had like the tail of the tape up there that told you a little bit about the fighters. How many times do you go to a regional show, you're there, you know, first, second fight of the night, and, you know, it's against guys who are, you know, maybe it's their pro debut, or maybe they had a couple of, you know, fights, you really don't know much about them, but putting up that tail of the tape kind of gives you a little insight into the fighter.
And an opportunity for you to say things are virtually identical. Did you say that?
No, I never. No. I never did the thing virtually identical. I would point out, like, if there was a major height difference and how that could play, into the fight.
Did you have any? Do you have any catchphrases yet?
No, man. I'm not, like, when I do play by play, I'm not really a catchphrase guy. You know, I'm just not. I mean, It's one of those things of I try to, you know, and anytime I get these MMA play-by-play opportunities, I take advantage of them. And I would tell anyone who's young in the, you know, sports journalism field, you take advantage of every opportunity that you get. It's something that I learned very early on. So, you know, I was grateful for, you know, the people at Shogun Fights to give me this opportunity. And I had a great time. You know, it's one of those things of, you know, I'm more of a radio guy. You know, getting to do TV a little bit, it allows you to see things from a different side. But, you know, really, I thought it was great for me as a podcaster and a journalist in the sport to kind of see what Alliance MMA is doing. You know, I had a lot of takeaways from that. You know, and look, at the end of the day, they're a regional promoter. They're trying to do what other regional promotions are trying to do. You know, you're trying to put butts in the seats, get the right ticket sellers on the fight card, and put it together an entertaining product. And I think anyone who was at the Hard Rock Event Center on this past Saturday night down in Hollywood, you know, they walked away and said, hey, you know what? I was entertained.
And so, kind of taking things away from just broadcasting MMA, did you have any thoughts of, like, what would be a good thing to tell people that they may not realize for a guy doing play-by-play?
Like in terms of what I have to do?
Yeah, what you have to do, the process of it. I mean, I'll often after a UFC or a Bellator, especially me, I'll just come out and criticize the guys who are working their ass off. What do you think is like things that aren't, you know, people thinking about?
You know this. When you're doing that type of work, you got someone in your ear who's telling you where we're going next, where you're going. And, you know, when you're working with a production team that you've never worked before, you're trying to figure out how everyone works together. And it took me a couple of fights to kind of get into the groove of what we were doing. But, you know, it's more of me. I'm always like, okay, we're going here. We're going there. What are we doing after this? What am I saying here? There's a lot of things that go through my mind as I'm calling it MMA fight card.
Did you have to pee at all?
No. Thank God, no.
Wow. That's impressive. How long was the show? 3 hours?
Probably 3.5-4 hours, something like that. I mean, and it was when, you know, and the fights just went fight after fight after fight. There was one time it took like, I want to say about a 5-minute intermission, but it was fight after fight after fight. And it made me think, like, could you imagine if the UFC did that, how much shorter UFC events would be?
Yeah, I honestly feel like watching this Fight Pass card, that has to be the way UFC cards are moving forward. They got to figure out how to tell stories. They have to figure out how to fit commercial breaks into fast-paced fight cards. As simple as that. And also, like, tell stories within 2 minutes. 2 minutes for a video package or your commentator to hype it up, because that's the killer. And when you see it in the regional scene, or you see it, you know, at a live event, or you see it just on Fight Pass that we did this weekend, it just feels like a different show, because you just spend less time wasted time thinking about, you know, social media or life in general and boredom. So yeah, that is something that is like almost a no brainer that this needs to be what the product is. Like, for instance, okay, I've been thinking about this. It's insane that we have so much filler time on these broadcasts, because can you imagine if you're watching an episode of let's see, I don't know, Breaking Bad, real current reference here, right? Mm-hmm. And they pace the show where like 25 minutes into the show, they decided to do a 10-minute talk show. They just stopped doing the product that you want to watch, and they just had like, you know, Chris Hardwick doing a talk show in the middle of the event. It makes no sense. To me, you're on TV, do the product. And also, when you're not doing the product, it's to get the stories over the fighters. So I just think the UFC and Bellator really needs to focus and hone in on fight. But
I would love if that would happen. I mean, you know, it's like that tweet we talked about a couple weeks on the podcast where, you know, John Anik, you know, tweeted about how, yeah, you know, UFC asked so much out of our fans. You know, they asked their fans to sit there for 7 hours. And, you know, obviously this UFC London event was a fight card that I watched after the fact. I'll tell you, one of the things that I loved about UFC London, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the fights in this aspect, I love the enthusiasm of Dan Hardy.
Yeah. Yeah, he really works well, and they really have a great rotating cast of commentary characters. I think I appreciate Dan Hardy more just because we only get him so much, because every time we get him, I just think of how great he is, because you're right. It's a different type of energy, I guess would be the way to describe it, because you don't really get that from some of the other color guys like Dom, Cruz, and Cormier, who are great on their own. But I think that you have Dan Hardy in particular probably leads the color guys in terms of energy. I might even put like Paul Felder number two. Maybe it's just the fact that we aren't exposed to them so much that their energy seems super high up there, and that's a great deal. But it does seem like out of all the color guys, one of the two things that I think separates Dan Hardy is definitely the fact that he is so plugged into what's happening, and he's like having almost the time of his life, like he's really enjoying it. And then also, he's just another one of those guys that does a phenomenal job of breaking down the fight game the audience. So
I love his breakdowns.
It's phenomenal. Ones on YouTube,
I mean, the stuff that they do on the UFC YouTube channel, you know, for the pay-per-views, where he, you know, he's breaking down the main event and co-main event. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like every time I watch those, I learned something more about the fight game. And I think that's, you know, and I was talking about this on Saturday before the broadcast. You know, one of the things I want people to walk away when I'm doing a broadcast is feel like they've learned something. And with Dan Hardy, every time I listen to him talk about MMA, I feel like I learned something.
Yeah, yeah. To me, if you're doing a color, you want to obviously be entertaining, but information is so big, and it's like two-pronged information. You want to get over what's actually happening to the audience. Like, you want to actually educate or add color to the action, maybe make something that without audio would be boring and more interesting based on the strategy and attacks. And also from just a storytelling standpoint, there's real value in digging deep into each of these fighters, figuring out what makes them interesting, and throughout the fight maybe offer that information, add color to their story, and that way someone can get invested in watching Brett Johns or Tim Elliott or Robert Whittaker. You know, it's like a two-pronged attack when you're adding color. You're adding color both with what's happening with the fighting and with the fighters themselves. That's the time to do your promotion, is literally during the fight. You're trying to – it's much like pro wrestling. You're trying to get over characters, and you never know who's going to be the one that actually wins the fight. But it's a tough job, and I think the benefit the UFC guys have is they're constantly changing, and I think it's easy to get tired of a guy you hear every single show. But when you're just constantly changing, it's like you have a new – girlfriend or boyfriend every week. You know, you never get tired, and I've never had that in my life, but I'm assuming that's what it's like if you're a rock star.
By the way, speaking now, so I don't know if you saw this, did you see who is working with John Anik for UFC 223?
Taruto?
No.
Who?
Joe Rogan and Jimmy Smith.
Wow, that's it. I know. That's cool. I actually never thought that they would put them two together because they almost seem like the same person. Not the same person, but I feel like they fit the same role of non-UFC fighter color commentator, also kind of bald. That's cool, though.
I mean, everyone kind of wondered if they would ever put them together, and yeah, that came out. DC's going to be there, but he's going to be there, obviously, supporting Khabib Nurmagomedov, and it's still kind of crazy, the fact that the next 2 weekends we don't have a UFC or Bellator show. It's still kind of crazy to think that.
Yeah.
Not complaining. Just saying weird.
No, and I tell you what, when we do finally get that UFC 222 card, I went backwards in time. When we finally get UFC 223, I think we're going to, like, actually really appreciate it. I don't know, Jason. I might actually look forward to watching a UFC event. And just looking at UFC 223 now, this is not only like so much better than what we've gotten for most of the year, but just the absence in time. Like, I cannot wait for fights on the prelims. I can't wait for Ray Borg and Brandon Moreno.
Yeah.
I just think, there will be a time later in the year, probably in mid-April, that we'll be complaining about oversaturation. But as we stand now, I think it's important to look around and smell the air and say, we got a little time to actually get hyped about Ferguson, Khabib, and Rose and Joanna.
I have absolutely zero problems laying down $65 for that pay-per-view.
Dude, yeah, this is going to be one of the top pay-per-views we get. I think it's going to be super enjoyable, and this is the vision. This has to – honestly, if you're the UFC, you need to set this as the standard of what you expect people to charge, spend $65 for. It's not going to be this great every time, but you should want to get in the realm of this possibility. Maybe one of the strategies is as simple as book two title fights on every pay-per-view. That might just be one of the or if not two title fights, two major fights.
You look at 223. Yeah, you have the two title fights, but the other three fights on the pay-per-view, I'm very interested in.
Yeah, every main card fight comes across like a main card fight. We're not getting. If you just look back at, you can point to one or two fights that stick out like a sore thumb. Like going back to UFC 222, the heavyweight fight that we got, and I can't even remember who was in it. I just remember their heavyweights, Arlovski and Stefan Struve. That to me did not get me excited. Wow. And, you know, honestly, Sean O'Malley, Andre Sukmenthal was an amazing fight, but it's one that when it's the third most interesting fight on your fight card, that's little – to me, Sean O'Malley, Andre should be like the fifth best fight on the main card, because to me that fifth fight slot really serves as like super exciting prospect potential. Yeah. But because of Arlovsky and Struve, it really jarred down. And just going back to UFC 221, what do we got here? Oh, we have four main card fights that are very interesting. So, yeah, bottom line. The main card for UFC 223 is awesome. I can't wait for UFC 223. It's going to be – a lot of times we get negative, but I think it's going to be kind of a positive edition of the show until we get into some of the news and we can get negative.
You know, when we go back to UFC Fight Night Verdum versus Volkov, a surprising night. You know, when I saw that Alexander Volkov had won, I mean, this is a guy that – you know, when you look at when he lost to Tony Johnson and Chuck Congo, I don't know if anyone saw him going on the run that he has gone on. He had two wins over an M1 challenge, and now in the UFC, wins against Tim Johnson, Roy Nelson, Stefan Struve, and Fabricio Werdum. And, you know, no question. I mean, yeah, he came into this fight as the number 8th ranked title challenger in the UFC heavyweight division. But, you know, he's, you know, right there in the mix in terms of, and I know he's mentioned about, you know, sitting back and waiting for Stipe and Cormier. I don't know if that's necessarily the brightest of decisions, but, you know, as I went back and watched this fight, you know, and handled himself really well on the ground, when you think about that's Fabricio Werdum's world. And, you know, I remember when I was calling the Shogun fights on Saturday, there was a point in the main event where I had said, you have to wonder at what point does Colton Smith decide it's time to go for broke. And it seems like, it, you know, right before the fight ended on Saturday between Werdum and Volkov in the fourth round, it seemed like that was a moment where Verdum's like, well, screw it, it's time to go for broke, and he gets knocked out.
It's something where it helps whenever your opponent is tired also, and that was a big-time benefactor for Volkov. Is I was not expecting Werdum to look the way he did in that fourth and third round. I don't know if it's age or maybe – and he exerted his energy too much with some of his grappling maneuvers in the first two frames, because this was Verdum's fight early on and throughout. But it really helped that Werdum just was a step too slow, was also had suffered damage throughout. And this was a perfect opponent and a perfect time for Volkov to throw caution to win and land a few punches and finish Werdum. So it was a performance that wasn't absolutely dominant. It wasn't one that made me think he's a viable challenger for the winner of Stipe Daniel Cormier, but it was without a doubt a validating win that puts Volkov seriously into discussion with your next group under that. He's kind of finds himself in the group of fighters that are looking to rehabilitate their careers, like Cain Velasquez, Francis Ngannou, as well as guys coming off victories like Lewis and Curtis Blaydes. So I don't know what's next for Alexander Volkov. I'll give you a suggestion in half a second. But I do think this was a really interesting result, because I really enjoy these fight night cards when things don't go chalk. When you have something that looks clear on paper that Verdum's going to come in here, and it's going to be business as usual. He's going to get a win, get his paycheck, and move on up on the rankings, maybe set up a fight with Cain Velasquez. And that just does not happen. So it's really interesting to happen. Verdum's going to find himself with his back against the cage. To me, the question surrounding Werdum in his next fight will simply be about time and if he is aging, which is just a constant threat for every aging fighter. But to me, watching this fight, it was Werdum got tired, Volkov capitalized, and moving forward, I will offer you that I think Volkov is very much a B-side fighter at this point. He isn't a guy that's drawing eyeballs. So with that in mind, and with also in mind that I'm not completely, even though he's a part of the top tier of heavyweights now, I don't think he has the staying power to stay there, and I could be so wrong. Look at what he's done lately. I would offer to you B-side of a fight with Francis Ngannou next.
I think you're going Francis, Derek Lewis.
When I was looking at Derek Lewis, and Lewis Ngannou is a better fight than Volkov,
is the thing to me about Volkov wanting to wait for a title matchup. If Curtis Blaydes beats Alistair Overeem in June, wouldn't Blaydes be right there?
Yeah, no. If Alexander Volkov waits for a title shot, he's not going to get one. His wins are over Attila Vega, Timothy Johnson, Roy Nelson, Stefan Struve, and Verdum. He's not going to get a title shot. Francis Ngannou coming off a loss is closer to a title shot than Volkov. I mean, I'm kind of giving you a hyperbole there, but I'm kind of not. Because Alexander Volkov is not going to get a title shot unless like five guys get injured. He needs to fight again. He needs to fight a top guy. The reason and Lewis Francis is a great fight, but like the other A-side heavyweight that I have in mind when I'm kind of making a matchup is Cain Velasquez. Like, I'm trying to figure out who his dancing partner is going to be, and I almost thought maybe Lewis would be a good dancing partner for Cain Velasquez.
Here's the thing about Cain. When's he actually going to fight?
I know, but he's got to fight, right? Like, he's got to fight in the future, and I assume it's going to happen at some point in 2018. Maybe I'm stupid for assuming that because, like, obviously it never happens, but to me, he's a guy that's clearly a driving force in the heavyweight division. When I look at fighters that are driving forces, it's Francis, it's Overeem, it's Cain, I guess you could say Verdum, and I guess you could say Derek Lewis. But those are the guys I book first, and then I look at the other guys next. And for Cain, like, I think Lewis is a good opponent, but honestly, Derek Lewis is the type of guy where he's a good opponent for everybody. Like, I want to see Lewis fight everybody. Maybe not Curtis Blaydes. I think Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis are the exact opposite of one another, right?
That would be dumb matchmaking.
Yeah, that would be like Blaydes and Lewis right next to each other in the rankings are polar opposite when it comes to marketability or viability. As I'm excited, like, no one does a matchmaker column and puts Curtis Blaydes there.
Here's a question: if you do Ngannou Blaydes, all right, Ngannou Lewis,
yeah,
do you make it a Fox main event or co-main event of a pay-per-view?
I think a big part of the discussion is, if you're UFC, where do you think you're going to be on TV next year? Because if you're going to be on TV somewhere else, I would make it a co-main event. If you're going to continue your relationship with Fox, I would put it on Fox. That's kind of the way I would lay it out. Because I think if you're not continuing your relationship with Fox, you have an idea of where you're going next.
Yeah.
God, it's almost like you really don't care that much about these Fox cards. To me, the only downside is there's a long-term effect of you just lose TV fans, but I don't know how big of a deal that is. To me, it's like all the value is putting all your stars on pay-per-view while you have your Fox deal.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what happens. You look at Fabricio Verdum, and it's hard to say whether, you know, how much of this is maybe, is it the decline of Verdum? You know, he is 40 years old. Turns 41 in July. You mentioned he did have success in this fight, but ultimately he does get knocked out. And this was a matchup where Fabricio really had nothing to gain. And so you got to give him credit for still fighting when he really had nothing to gain in this matchup.
Yeah. Yeah. This was there. If had he beaten Volkov, he may have moved up one spot in the rankings, and there was a whole lot to lose. And he lost a whole lot here. He is still a fighter that I wouldn't oppose matching him up with someone like Cain Velasquez still because of his name value and because of his recent history of success. But again, this appears to be he finds himself in a spot where he is hanging off the edge of heavyweight stardom. He looked really good in this fight. There were a lot of positives to take away. The big downside in this fight for Verdum is his stand-up looked a lot weaker than it has in the past. It was he had some success, obviously. Look at the face of Alexander Volkov. Yeah. But it wasn't as dynamic as originally. And that's a big problem. As we kind of saw towards the end of his first UFC run, just getting blitzed on the feet was kind of the spell that ended his first run. So for Verdum, it's like the most important fight is always the next one, and that is so true with him. I think we're going to figure out whether or not he's going to be a viable heavyweight for the next year and a half based on his next performance. And as far as what you do with him, I'm not super sure. You could obviously do the Cain Velasquez fight still, which is one we thought about maybe you could do with the win here, but I think you could still do it with a loss. If you want to rehabilitate Verdum and you put him on the A side, I think you could look at a fight against a rematch from UFC 70 against Andrei Arlovsky.
Arlovsky's booked.
Who's he booked against?
Taya Tuivasa.
Ooh. Yeah, I know who the UFC wants to win that fight.
Oh, Arlovsky, clearly.
Yeah, Arlovsky, clearly. Oh, man. So who are you looking at here that could be an interesting fight?
Kane's name comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, when does Kane want to fight?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's a good one.
I mean, if Kane wants to come back in July or August, I think the fight with Verdum makes a lot of sense.
Man, I think so too. That would be a great, that'd be great, man, if we get Kane back. And that early would be surprising, but honestly, it's that late because of how long he's been gone. But yeah, I guess that's the way you could go too. That would suck for Verdum. That is a tough way to rehabilitate yourself, but you know, that is an absolute fire. He could take advantage of a guy in Kane who's lost a major step. Obviously, that's going to be a major question. But again, what did we learn here? Big time cardio issues for Verdum. Not dynamic striking. Solid grappler. Obviously, we knew that, and he exemplified that. He just simply gassed out and got finished by a very strong fighter.
And then the co-main event, I don't think anyone picked this one as being a fight of the night. Of course, it was a rematch. Of course, the first meeting happened back in 2015 where Jimmy Manuel scored a decision victory on that night. But on this night, it was Jan Błachowicz getting a decision win. Rocks Jimmy Manuel early on in the fight. Then in the second round, Jimmy rocks him, and then ultimately, the victory comes for Jan. Wouldn't be surprised to see these guys tangle it up, sometime later down the road for a rubber match. But man, did not see this fight going the way it went down.
Yeah, dude, the biggest surprise to me is like the discussion after this fight is we want a trilogy of Jimmy versus Jan. Holy moly, that is not what I expected. It's amazing that you have the fact that Jimmy went into Jan's country of Poland and beat him there. Jan went to England and beat Manuel there, and now I don't know where we do the trilogy, bro. I don't know what country we go to. Well, what's the country in between Warsaw and London? I know those are cities and not countries, but I don't know, man. This was awesome. It was a great fight. What I loved were two things: the performance out of Jan. I thought also the fighting spirit out of Jimmy Manuel was something to behold, the way he continued to move forward, even though you could tell his body was failing him in that third round. It was a clear-cut decision victory for Jan Błachowicz, but it was also, to me, a fight where you just come around with a lot of respect for Jimmy Manuel. And honest to God, you could straight up do the trilogy fight next for both guys, just because – I didn't come away from this fight saying I can't wait to see Jan take on this light heavyweight or Jimmy Manuwa square up with Patrick Cummings. Like, I don't know what direction you go with both guys. And to be completely honest, there's a lot of momentum for these two squaring up once again. And I think while you have the momentum, you might as well just do it and do Manuwa Błachowicz somewhere. Maybe a fight past main event. Maybe not. But this was a hell of a fight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you're Jan, you probably don't want to go back to a rubber match. You probably want to get a top five type fight, but we'll see what happens next there. But big win for him. Tom Dukinwa gets a win over Tarion Ware. Here's my question about this fight. How can someone justify 30-27?
Mm-hmm. That is a hell of a question. Let's see, who did it? Cartledge. Who's Cartledge? Let me look up this person's name. Ben Cartledge is the one who did it. I mean,
I'm watching this fight and knowing what happened because I saw some of the social media posts from Tarion Ware. I'm sitting there going, and I watch the fight and go, I would love to hear that judge explain a 30-27 card.
So here's something interesting here about that, okay? That 30-27 card, I agree, makes no sense. But if you do look at the other two judges, Judge David Lethaby and – oh, my God. Why did I even say their names? Masij Motulski. All right. One has round two. Well, they both obviously have round one for Duquesnoy. I mean, he straight up outstruck Darian Ware. That's clear cut. Round two, one judge has it for Ware and the other one has it for Duquesnoy. Round three, one judge has it for Duquesnoy and the other one has it for Ware. So, like, all two out of three judges scored every round for Duke. I did a bad job of explaining that. Basically, what I'm saying is there wasn't – if you look at the other two judges, there wasn't a clear-cut Terry and Ware won this round on both of their scorecards. They flip-flopped, which is kind of crazy as well. But, yeah, 30-27 to me is stupid. And there's a case to be made that Terry and Ware actually won this five rounds two and three. So I felt bad for him as the judges' scorecards are read, and that's a long, long ride back home to California. But
I hope he gets certified in the UFC.
Oh, dude, yeah, hell yeah. I think he absolutely should. And I thought he looked great. But just to me, the difference was the leg kicks out of Duquesnoy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, that was key for him. You know, for Tom Duquesnoy, you know, this is a guy that was, you know, he came in the UFC, a lot of steam behind him. You know, was kind of see if can he get that steam back there. The opening fight of the main card, Leon Edwards gets a victory with 1 second left in the fight. He was well on his way to a decision victory. He gets a win there over Pierre Sabata. He has now won five in a row since losing to Kamar Usman back at the end of 2015. He mentioned about the fact of wanting to fight Darren Till, who was going to headline UFC Fight Night 130. I don't see him getting that matchup personally. I would love to see Darren Till, Kamar Usman, though.
Oh, yeah. I think that's much more realistic, and I think that's a fight where there's a lot more to gain if you're Darren Till against Usman than Leon Edwards. I mean, Edwards climbing up the ladder, and a victory over Peter Sabata is real awesome. And I guess it's insane, man, that we got not one but two fights here that ended with 1 second left in the three-round frame. But we got that with this one in a fight on the prelims that I'm sure we'll dig into. So just that was crazy on its end. And obviously this was a referee stoppage, so it was completely kind of random here. But I think Sullivan for Leon Edwards. I mean, Peter Sabata has looked really awesome and renewed since returning to the UFC. You know, he started off in the UFC just straight up 0-3, then spent time away, earned a spot back. And he had only lost one time in five fights heading into this one. But to me, even if Leon Edwards didn't get the benefit of a referee stoppage, he obviously would have won the decision. Now, that can't be said about the other fight that ended with 1 second left.
Yeah, you look at the other one. That was Paul Craig, a triangle choke submission on the preliminary card. I'll tell you, you know, as I saw the results of these fights before actually watching the fight card, the result that really jumped out to me was Akeem Dawodu losing in 39 seconds. He was one of those guys that I was just – I've been super high on for several years now. That when I think of some of the things from preliminary card, that's one that really jumps out to me.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, but for Dawodu, when I think of him, I think on that fight, it sucks that that happened. But also, this could be a learning experience because he just got rocked by Danny Henry. Immediately got rocked and immediately got tapped out in 39 seconds. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's rough. He'll probably get another shot in the UFC, but it's maybe not something you expect to happen each and every time. I mean, this was a real fun prelims. I guess the one boring fight, it may have been the Ray Johnson fight, but you had that. You had back-to-back-to-back first-round finishes to close out the prelims with Charles Byrd just straight up, you know, dominating John Phillips on the ground and tapping him out, as well as Danny Roberts with a solid knockout over Oliver Endcamp. But to me, the highlight of the prelims was without a doubt the story with Paul Craig and Magomed Ankalaev, because this was a crazy fight, man. You had Ankalaev, bro, dominating this fight. Clearly won round one. Clearly won round two. Was winning round three. And then Craig gets the triangle choke. And Ankalaev taps out with a second left, Jason. I mean, I understand when a guy is squeezing your head is going to pop like a pimple. You ain't thinking about the clock. But if Ankalaev doesn't tap out with 1 second, he's getting a winning paycheck. That has to eat at you. Oof. so much, man. That sucks for him. I'm sorry, Magomed. That really does suck. And then Paul Craig, I mean, this guy's straight up underdog, man. Had lost two in a row via first round finishes heading this one. His name is Bearju, I think. Yeah. And yeah, he managed to come out here and pull off, to me, one of the stories of the card, that triangle choke. But with 1 second left, honestly, the difference in pain is minimal because, like, by the time the submission was rendered not there, the submission was released, the fight was already over anyway. So that sucks for Magomed.
Prior to Paul Craig, Cajun, that's apparently how he wants it pronounced, not Cajun. Went back, if you listen to the broadcast, that's how it was said. But he gets split decision win. But the reason we bring him up is I'm going to play comments he made in his post-fight media scrum. When we come back, Daniel and I are going to react to what he had to say.
Yeah, it's just, it upsets me when two of the world's best martial artists, because really that's what we are in the UFC, we're the greatest martial artists really that have ever lived, because the state of martial arts right now is at its highest evolutionary form that it's ever been. And then because you don't like the way the judges scored it, you're going to boo the fighter? You're going to boo that martial arts master? Like, it just seems very dishonorable to me, and it upsets me greatly. I have a bit of an issue with the fans of mixed martial arts because of the way they treat the fighters. And in my opinion, it stems from the top. Like, a lot of the time you'll see Dana White just giving the fighters so much grief. If you don't go out and just sling leather and bleed for him, then he's talking all this smack about him, you know? And because the leader of the organization acts like this, then it's so much easier for the fans to act like this. So it really upsets me. It's a huge problem that I have with it.
Now, I understand where he's coming from, Daniel. However, I'm a believer in, I believe the fans have the right to boo.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I like where he's coming from, sort of. I don't agree with him at all, but I like where he's coming from, and I'm glad he feels comfortable. And Johnson's been a guy who's always been outspoken, and I really appreciate that he's able to come out here and point blank talk about, you know, Dana White talking crap about fighters. He's like, that sucks, and that sets the tone. And he's got a point there, but it's outrageous. Or maybe not outrageous, but it's just not self-aware about what reality is. You know, this isn't a martial arts tournament. This isn't the Karate Kid 2, and we're all watching our little son and daughter do martial arts. This is an entertainment product. Every single person that is in that arena watching you or paying money, like, they are paying money that they earned to entertain themselves, and that's the bottom line. That is it. I don't think people understand, or I don't think Johnson necessarily understands the dynamic here at play. Is these fans most fans don't really care about the martial arts respect aspect. They want entertainment, because if they're going to come out to a product and they are expected to cheer every single fighter or be quiet or do whatever, show respect, the consumer's going to, like, say, screw you, I'm going to go find another product to spend my money on, and all the world's quote-unquote best martial artists aren't going to have a job. So that's just the reality of the situation. Is like, it's obvious that this is not something that people need. It's something people enjoy. And once you begin to change the dynamic where there's this weird sense of everybody gets cheered no matter what, it just becomes, like, really weird and unrealistic, and it's just kind of tone deaf.
You know, at the end of the day, and we've talked about this before, sports is entertainment, you know, and it's not cheap to go to a UFC event. I mean, if a fan doesn't like a judge's scorecard, they have every right to boo. I mean, and I understand where Cajun's coming from. I get it. But the way I look at it is, you know, whatever that those fans pay, probably 100 pounds, you know, it probably costs them for that ticket. You know, I can't blame them for airing out their opinion. I understand he doesn't like it, but at the end of the day, you know, sports is entertainment. And if you don't like what you're seeing, I believe you have every right to boo.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a part of the dynamic of entertainment, and that's what this is. you can I don't know. I mean, I understand being upset if you're Johnson with that, because it makes you feel awful. And maybe you could criticize the fact that people don't have empathy. But breaking news, every single person in the world doesn't have empathy. You know, like it's not a perfect system. And that's kind of cool about it. That's just the breaks of the game, kid. So I don't know what else to say other than, like, it happens in every entertainment product. You look at professional wrestling. Yeah, I mean, these are people who work really hard, and if their match sucks, they'll get booed or no reaction at all. And that's just the dynamic. That's what you sign up for. This isn't a black belt karate seminar. This is an entertainment product that you sell to get people in the arena, and you sell for big money to TV deals. And if everyone thought like Cajun Johnson, that would be awesome, and that would be cool. We could bow to each other when we enter the arena and wear, you know, gis and stuff. But that's just not reality.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, for the person that's sitting at home, if, you know, if they don't like it, what mostly happens is they change the channel.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the tone deafness of some of the golf criticism that the golfers have, where like they get upset that fans like get too excited. I understand there's some crazy circumstances. Like,
you mean like how Rory yeah. doesn't want alcohol served at golf events?
That specifically.
Oh yeah, that's thinking about. Never gonna happen.
Exactly. Now that being said, mentioning like the wife of golfers, that's probably a little too much. But you know, yeah, lack of beer is like screw you. Who the hell's gonna watch golf for more than 50 minutes?
I will tell you this, because the tournament that was 2 weeks ago was here in the Tampa Bay area. There, and because of Tiger playing so well, you would have thought it was a party. I mean, because I remember hearing they had to find 20,000 additional parking spaces.
Wow. 25,000. That is a draw. Yeah. Yeah, man, that's crazy. Tiger's good, and you just look at the TV ratings, and it's insane.
Oh, look, I never watch golf. Tiger's in contention, I'm watching.
That's true. I watched the last hole of that tournament 2 weeks ago, and I just saw it on Twitter.
I remember I was sitting at home on Sunday. I think it was the day of the selection Sunday, and I remember I was literally the whole day, and my wife's looking at me like, seriously, you're just gonna sit here and watch golf? I'm like, yeah, Tiger's in contention, I gotta watch, see if he's gonna win.
Exactly. Tiger is like one of these athletes that is tailor-made for Twitter, man. Twitter just becomes Tiger Woods Central when he's in contention. And
you think, I mean, and I'm like 15, I think I'm 15 years older than you are, but mm-hmm. Tiger, you talk about, he is a guy that changed the sport. You know, when you think about how many people he brought into the game, and I feel like in kind of relating this to MMA, we're still kind of, you know, we have Conor, but it's like we're trying to find that fighter that's going to be around for 5 or 10 years that's going to bring a different fan to the sport.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's impossible to find a guy like that. Or no, impossible to find, this is the wrong way to say it. There's no formula. There's no thing you can do to find it. You just got to hope to God it happens.
I remember talking to someone in MMA PR about this. And they were just like, you know, if there was a formula on how to find the next great star, every promotion would be using that formula. But there is no formula.
Yeah. What I'm really interested in is to see what this guy, oh God, I don't know amateur wrestling at all. But there was this guy who challenged in the heavyweight division. He's from Penn State, and he lost against Kyle Snyder. I got to find this guy's name. But he was and like the weight difference between these two guys, I think, was like 60 pounds or something like that. And it was like the main event of the NCAA championship. There's like some amateur wrestling guy listening to this being like, you're just butchering my sport. But this
I think I vaguely remember seeing a tweet about this.
His name is Kuhn or something, and he is huge. And all I could think of is like, this guy's like the next Brock Lesnar.
Didn't somebody put up a tweet of like him next to Brock Lesnar and how much they looked alike?
I didn't see that, but I believe it. I believe it because this guy's like an insane athlete. God. I just Googled Kuhn Penn State, and I still don't get it. What kind of – how is amateur wrestling not this pop? Adam Kuhn, his name is this guy.
Okay.
Anyways, that's the guy who I'd point to. This guy looks And he looks like it, like an insane man. He is huge, and the best thing about him is he is an insane athlete. I think Adam Kuhn is either going to be a big MMA star or a big wrestling star, wrestling star.
And we need it. Anything else about UFC London stick out to you?
Oh, man, I think we nailed it. I mean, the only fight we didn't talk about in passing was Dmitry Sosnovsky just tapping out Mark Godbeer. This was just Sosnovsky's undefeated, came in, took care of business against Godbeer, got the rear naked choke. But I think we nailed it. Great fight card. Only had three decisions, and that along with the flow of the fight card made this feel like a fast one, even though two of the finishes literally lasted 14 minutes and 59 seconds.
Yeah, and to kind of wrap up this week in MMA, I'm going to let you hear my conversation with Caleb Williams, who scored a knockout victory in the co-main event of Shogun Fights. You've probably seen the highlight of his knockout, a little bit of a viral video, so I had a chance to talk to him about his win last weekend in Shogun Fights. I am now joined by a man that has really become a viral sensation over the past couple of days. Of course, I was cage side calling the fights on Flow Combat for Alliance MMA Presents Shogun Fights. It is Caleb Williams. Caleb, I appreciate the time. You know, obviously, where I was sitting at on the cage side was right to the right of where ultimately the fight comes to an end. And initially, I didn't even really see what happened. At what point did you realize that Matt McCook was out?
Man, after we hit, I kind of back mounted him and I postured up because I was about to drop a punch. But right as I was posturing up, my coach Steve was yelling, "He's out, he's out, he's out." So I just, then that's like right when I could see, like I looked up and I was like, "Yep, he's out." So I just stood up. And when I stood up, obviously the refs, it's like, "Oh shit." And he stops the fight. And I just kind of walk off and then celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things of when they showed us the replay. The first thing that really jumped out to me was all three of your cornermen jumped up immediately and was basically trying to tell the referee, "Hey, he's out." And and obviously you didn't. But even before that, was the fight was going your way? I mean, was it playing out exactly the way you thought?
Yes and no. Honestly, going into this fight, I really didn't know too much about him. I know he trains Wagner Rocha. Obviously they got a good jiu-jitsu school. So, in my head, I was like, maybe he tries to take me down. But then, right off the bat, I threw that first inside kick, and then he came, trying to strike. So I was like, all right. And then, I landed, I think, two or three left hooks, like, right off the bat, and it kind of just set the tone, and then I just kind of just started throwing.
And then, of course, once the fight comes to the end, you're doing the interview in the cage, and the emotion started to get to you. And I know we had talked the week of the fight about all the things that had gone on with you just personally leading up to this fight. I mean, was it just kind of one of those things of it all just kind of caught up at one moment?
Yeah, that, and then, my aunt, my cousin Jake's mom's down here for the fight. So, it's definitely an emotional night, trying to talk about it and stuff. And it kind of just all hit, and try to hold it together the best I could.
But you get the win, we've talked about the frustrations that you've had over the last year of, the split decision loss, which I still don't know how that they scored it for your opponent there, and then the canceled fights. I mean, is it one of those things of like, is it kind of like you got this chip off your shoulder now of like, man, I finally got in there?
Yeah, definitely, it was a big, weight of relief, just after, everything, with the loss and then the fight getting canceled and just all that madness last year. And it was nice to kind of go out there and just get it done and get it done impressively, something, just kind of make a statement and hopefully just carry that momentum on into the next one.
Have you ever been a part of whether it's a teammate of yours or, a friend of yours that has won the way that you won?
Yeah, I mean, not exactly to that level, but I've been a part of, guys, when guys knock dudes out, obviously it's insane, because you get almost more hyped for their victory, when someone finishes, especially when it's like just sudden, than your own. But, honestly, I've never even really witnessed live, like someone slam KO someone.
Yeah, I mean, and as I mentioned, it's become a viral sensation. I know on Sunday morning when I was getting ready to drive back to Tampa, I saw that it was on Bleacher Report, and I don't think there's too many times I've seen MMA news on the Atlanta Journal Constitution. It's over in England and Russia. I mean, has anyone reached out to you that you were just blown away by?
Not necessarily. I mean, a lot of my coaches, congratulate me and stuff. And obviously I keep getting, tweets and retweets, but, I haven't really got anything crazy that I wasn't expecting. Obviously I'm sure it's not done making its rounds. I'm sure there'll be people that would just be kind of late to it and catching up, and maybe I get tagged and some stuff.
That's ultimately a great thing for your career, because now you're in front of people that may have never even known who you were.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a very positive thing. Obviously getting the win's always good, but then anytime you can get something that is just kind of unorthodox and it can kind of project you a little farther than maybe that just a regular win would have.
And you were the co-main event of this fight card, and for anyone that didn't watch these fights, before that it was just knockout submissions all in the first round. Were you sitting back in the back going, oh man, I got to do something here to top all these other guys, especially, some of your teammates, including Gabe Barletta?
Yeah, obviously when I was in the back, I wasn't really getting all the play-by-plays. Obviously I knew how my teammates won, and I had seen some of the fights that seemed quicker, but man, the way they had us walking out and stuff, obviously everything was very well ran, and just, everything was punctual, it was on time, it ended good, but man, the walkouts were actually pretty long, and they would pull you on deck. So sometimes in between fights, it would seem like the fight was longer than it really probably was back there.
Yeah, I just know from calling the fights, we were just going one fight after another. There, I think that was the great things for the fans that were at the Hard Rock Event Center, brand new Hard Rock Event Center. But I will tell you this, I remember going down to the Hard Rock for when Bellator went down there, and I almost felt like I was in the same venue, even though I know it was a brand new venue, because the old Hard Rock Live was on the complete other side of the building.
Yeah, it was definitely it definitely brought back memories. I've been to a couple of the Bellators over there, but the energy was definitely there. Man, the crowd, the turnout, especially for the first show down here, I thought was really awesome. I mean, it was almost a packed house in there. It seemed like, at least.
Yeah, no, it was a great card there. And, of course, you have a win like this, and I know you're going to go out there, celebrate, you're going to take a couple of days off from the gym, but at what point do you start to kind of like get back in there and start hitting up your management about, hey, when's the next one going to be?
I'll be back in the gym probably first thing Monday, start, getting back into the gym. I'm going to take this week and kind of relax, but, already kind of been talking to him and seeing, what's next. Hopefully, looking at maybe like late May, early June-ish, sometime around then, kind of like the beginning of summer, hoping to get back in there. Obviously don't want a replay of last year.
Yeah.
Or, we're waiting forever.
I mean, how much of just getting back in the gym is just more about being there for the guys that help you get ready for this matchup?
Man, it's a big deal. Obviously, you want to give back to everyone that helped you in your camp, because, obviously every fight, when it's your fight, it's always going to feel like a UFC championship to you, because it's the most important thing for you. But, all these other guys coming in, helping you out, like, obviously it's not, besides getting training and, getting better that way, but it doesn't really do anything for them. So you got to be able to give back to them. If they got fights coming up and they need you, you got to be there for them, because, they're going to be there for you. Otherwise if you're not a good training partner, for your teammates, then they're not going to want to help you. So you definitely got to get back in there and help them.
I mean, with the week of, relax and all that, what do you do for fun just to kind of get your mind off the fight game?
It just depends, like my parents were down here. So, I went to the beach this weekend and, I might go to Orlando or something, just kind of get out of the house and go around. And sometimes I just stop in the gym, just see some training, see what else is going to happen. Even if I'm not working out, I still like to go watch sometimes.
Now I got to imagine part of this, you know, time off for you is enjoying some food you like. Is there a go? I mean, now, do you have mom and dad cook you up something that, you know, you grew up around your childhood, or do you take them, you know, around Coconut Creek to one of the better restaurants?
I mean, we kind of just go around a lot of times because, like, they don't have a house down here. So, you know, when they come down, they're staying in usually like a timeshare, you know, a hotel or something. So they obviously don't have a kitchen. But and they're usually not here, you know, a crazy amount of time. So we'll go bouncing around. But like Sunday we hit Bebe's, which I don't know if anyone's been to South Florida, but Bebe's, you know, chicken and waffles is the spot to hit.
Okay, David has told me about this place, and unfortunately, I had to bounce out early Sunday morning to get back to Tampa. But I when you said chicken and waffles, I go, oh, that's a place Arvelo has told me about.
Yeah.
Like what makes it so special?
Man, dude, the breading has, you know, a good mix of spice to it.
Okay.
So it's like a spice and it's salty, it's savory, you know, it's good crunch. The chicken's always juicy because they cook it fresh, you know, each batch you're getting like fresh chicken, you know. It's not like,
oh wow,
you know, they just have chicken already made. Like, you're getting fresh chicken, so they fresh make it for you. Man, and then the sides, like the waffles are unreal. Like, just the plain waffle, not even including that they have like red velvet, Reese's cup waffles, you know, they have like apple bacon waffles, donuts, everything. And then they also have their sides, like their mac and cheese, their mashed potatoes, the collard greens. You know, it's good, wholesome food.
Man, now I feel like, you know, I need to take the 4-hour drive down to South Florida and give me some chicken and waffles.
Yeah, Ben, and then like my buddy Ben, you know, everyone talks about Roscoe's, you know, fried chicken and waffles in LA, and he went and he's like, dude, it doesn't even compare to Bebe's.
Really?
Yeah, he stopped there, and Roscoe's is world famous.
You know, oh yeah,
chicken and waffles. Everyone talks about it, and he's like, man, he's like, obviously it was good, but he's like, I think Bebe's is better.
I've had chicken and waffles in Vegas at Hash House of Go-Go. It's really good. Anyone ever's been to Hash House of Go-Go, the food portions they give you are so huge. It's where you got to hope that you have a refrigerator in your hotel room, because there's no way you can eat it all.
Yeah.
But, of course, we look forward to seeing when that next fight does take place later on this year. Caleb, as always, congratulations on the victory, and appreciate the time, man.
Man, I appreciate it, man. Definitely, thanks for having me on.
Cool, man. I'll talk to you soon, man. Daniel, there was my conversation with Caleb Williams. And to see what is next for him, you hear him talk about looking to get there May, June, somewhere in that scenario. So congratulations to him. You know, while we do have no UFC or Bellator, there is regional MMA going on this weekend. Most notably, you've got LFA coming up on Friday night from California. Going to be headlined by Ricky Simon. Had Tyson Nam on the mind because we're going to hear from here in a little bit. But Ricky Simon going to be defending the bantamweight title. Of course, we had him on the podcast last week. Also, someone else we've had on the podcast as well, Christian Aguilar, is going to be on this fight card as well. So if you need that MMA fix, you got LFA on Friday on Access TV. Saturday, you have Invicta FC 28 on UFC Fight Pass. And speaking of Invicta FC 28, that is going to be our next interview, as I had a chance recently to catch up with Callie Robbins, who's going to be taking on Pearl Gonzalez. So I talked to her about this matchup coming up on Saturday at Invicta FC 28. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a fighter returns to the Invicta cage coming up here on March the 24th in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's Callie Robbins. Callie, appreciate the time. Will this be your first time visiting the state of Utah?
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, I'm sorry. It's not my first time visiting Utah. First time fighting there for sure. I used to live in California like years and years and years ago. And when I moved back to Milwaukee, my dad and I sort of made like a cross country trip, and we stayed in Utah. So I camped there, went through Zion, did all that. So I've been there once, but it's been a long time.
It has been some time since we saw you back at the end of August of last year. I know you've been in the training room, but you know what? How would you describe the past couple of months leading up to this matchup?
Yeah, I've just been working really hard on like keeping my weight down and stuff like that. I know that's like a major issue, and I've been luckily I've been happy to stay at like 7 to 10 pounds lighter, so I'm back at my normal like fighting weight. So I'm really, really happy with that. Just been helping teammates get prepared for their fights. I always stay in the gym training, so I'm there 100% of the time. It doesn't really change when it's a fight camp, other than, oh, we're gonna do these specific things, you know. So yeah, I've been doing that. I did like a little bit of traveling. I went to California to go visit a friend, and then we just ended up training. But yeah, I've just been happy and hanging out and staying on weight and training a lot.
I know the weight question is going to come up, and you understand that. Is it kind of a frustrating question? You know, because like, you know, it's going to come up, but does it at all get frustrating when it constantly comes up?
No, I feel like I deserve it. And I feel like, you know, like if people are interested, like I'm happy that they're interested in anything. But yeah, I worked really hard. I think as soon as when I came back from the fight, I basically sat down with my strength and conditioning coach, which he also helps me with my nutrition and stuff like that. And we just did like a very slow reverse diet, the healthy way, rather than me like just eating as much as possible and then blowing up and having to come back down. So as soon as I got back, I didn't gain much weight like after the fight. So I was able to maintain it, and any little blip up, we just controlled and brought it right back down. So I was happy to be healthy during this weight cut. I'm eating more than I did last time, and I'm incredibly lighter than I was last time. So it's just nice. It's a huge weight off my shoulders. And if anything, like this whole experience has just opened my eyes to like just the complications with like weight and women and getting older and hormones and all that boring stuff. At least I understand it a lot better than I used to.
Fighters always talk about the, you know, it's an education process of learning, you know, what's the proper ways to cut weight and things along those lines. And it seems like, you know, every time I talk to fighter that it's a mental thing. A lot of times where, you know, during a fight camp, you're stressing and, you know, with now you walking out a lighter weight, do you feel different in the training room as opposed to say when you're getting ready for your last fight?
Yeah, absolutely. I am like 100% night and day from what I was my last camp. I think last camp I was just super stressed, and you know, like I had a lot of pressure that I put on myself, and just some unrealistic expectations, and just it was a lot going into it, and I was, you know, almost a little too intense, a little too obsessed about the fight, and I think it all played a factor. And, you know, maybe it was like stress levels and stuff like that towards the end. Cause I know there was like, I couldn't eat any less food, and I couldn't train any more than I trained. And the weight was just not budging. And I just crossed my fingers and hoped that, you know, the water cut would do it. Where this time I've just been really happy and really confident. My coaches are happy with me. They're confident as well. It's just been really good vibes the whole time. And like, honestly, if anything, I'm really impressed with the last, you know, 7 weeks that I've had leading up to this. So I'm just happy with everything. And I mean, maybe that's what's helping the weight just peel off so easy. I'm just super content.
You know, in terms of, you know, just you talk about the differences of where you're at now, and you know, and now you've got this fight. You know, obviously, I think everyone would say the biggest name opponent of your career. You know, the fact that Pearl, you know, has fought in the UFC, and this is her first fight, and I think she probably has a lot to prove in this matchup. Mm-hmm. You know, when Invicta calls and they say, you know, Pearl Gonzalez, what was the initial thought on the opponent?
Yes. Just yes. And then let me check with Red, and then he was like, heck yeah, and that was kind of it. And we were like, okay, let's do this thing, you know. Yeah, I think it's a great matchup. I think it's cool that she's been in the UFC, and she's, you know, she's definitely tough, but like it's not like she wasn't on my radar from, you know, a while back, because I think we're both from Midwest, that sort of thing. So we were all both sort of like on our come up, and I you know, you know, she got to the UFC before me. Well deserved, but it's kind of cool. Like I kind of always thought I was going to fight her, so it wasn't like a big shock when her name came through.
When you think about it, you hear her name, what immediately pops in your mind in terms of her skills?
I just know that she's super tough and that she's dynamic and that, you know, she's got good hands, things like that. Very good, like scrambling on the ground. She's not super easy to sub. So I guess those would be, I would say, like her highlights that I would see from her. I definitely see like major holes and gaps and things like that. And I have 100% confidence in myself that I'm going to get this win. So, you know, I mean, anything can happen in a fight, but I just feel really good about it. So,
you know, fighters always talk about, hey, I need to focus on myself. I can't focus too much on my opponent. Is that your mindset of every time you have a fight? It's just like, look, yes, I have to understand what my opponent does well, you know, maybe what holes are in their game, but ultimately I need to worry about myself.
Yeah, and especially this one. Like I said, the last fight, I think I, like, super obsessed and watched way too much film. And this time I watched, like, you know, a little bit, maybe 10 minutes worth. And I was like, all right, I'm good. And I just leave everything else up to my coaches. Like, they know exactly what I need to be doing. I don't need to sit in and watch my opponent. I'm going to see her up close and personal soon enough. And if I think it's the same thing. It's like, if I'm going to go out there, so that's kind of where I was at. This whole training camp is just, you know, kind of stay off of social media a little bit more, kind of just focus on the things that make me happy day to day and, you know, just enjoy training.
You know, obviously you have not put much tape out there at all. I mean, is a lot of how you assess your own footage of it's just inside the training room and maybe trying to, you know, because fighters always talk about evaluating your own self and figuring out, you know, is there tendencies that you're showing? Is that pretty much for you of maybe going back and looking at your own, you know, footage inside the gym to try to self-evaluate yourself?
Yeah, like I definitely, like, from time to time will take video just to kind of see if, like, there's certain things that I see that maybe my coaches don't. But I'm always asking questions. I'm always, you know, I guess arguing a little bit with Red or, like, you know, this theory, that theory, definitely, like, friendly, but I'm like, no, why doesn't this work? Oh, it didn't work because of this. And he's like, no, this is why it didn't work. But I'm always kind of in their face about, you know, how things are going or where I need to be, or, you know, I think I'm pretty hard on myself when it comes to like training and stuff like that. And I like to be the best at everything that I do. So, I'm like, if this didn't work, like we need to fix this now. So, they're super, super, communicative and they're always talking with me and teasing me if I suck. So,
but I think you being your hardest critic, I think is a great trait to have as a fighter, because you're sitting there going, how can I, you know, even if you have a great performance, how can I top that performance? I think that's one of the traits that great fighters have to have.
Yeah, I definitely, after that fight, I was happy with the win, you know. It was such a, like, I think I was just so emotional after the fight. I was, like, freaking out and stuff like that. Then I got back, and then I was just super bummed about the weight and stuff like that. And then I was just sort of, like, I don't know, kicking rocks around, mad about the first 20 seconds. And then, I don't know, it took a little bit, and then I got out of my funk, and I was like, it's fine, let's start again, you know? Like, yeah, I guess, like, I was happy with the win, but not as happy as maybe some people would think. So.
But, of course, now you've got this fight, of course, Invicta FC 28 coming up on March 24th. Of course, live on UFC Fight Pass, as always. We'll look to see if you can go to 6-0. Look forward to seeing your fight. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
You can find me on Instagram at Lala Kali. It's LaLaAKali. I'm on Snapchat at Pop Tart Lala. So it'll be Pop Tart LaLaA. And then you can find me on Facebook by my name. That's pretty much it.
And there was my conversation with Kali Robbins. And, you know, Daniel, obviously some MMA to take in this weekend. If I'm around television set on Friday or Saturday night, I'll definitely be checking out these fight cards. If not, I'll be watching them after the fact.
Oh, will you really? Why? I don't understand why you aren't. You need to make it a priority to watch these live.
Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think it'll be on my priority list.
Oh my gosh, you are. It's a shame, Jason.
But the thing is, I love watching MMA on DVR.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to make a long commitment hour wise. You can get through the fight, you know, because then you know which fights are good and which ones weren't.
Yeah. I watched them all, Jason. I don't fast forward through the drudges like you. But I'm just joking. Yeah, you're totally right. Especially whenever it's not when it's not a UFC or Bellator card. You can just pinpoint one or two fights. I mean, I'm not going to watch this card live either. But if there's something super awesome or even notable as far as one fighter looks great, you want to go and check out the performance, I'll watch it. But what I love is about Fight Pass, even though I don't take advantage of it because I just don't, is it does seem like they have so many deals with so many promotions. There is always a fight card multiple fight cards every single week. I do like that. If I was a hardcore MMA geek, which I may be one day or return to that, there is something to spend your entire weekend in front of a computer watching fights.
Yeah, you've got this weekend on Fight Pass, you got Cage Wars 92, prelims start at 2 o'clock Eastern, main card at 5 p.m. Eastern. That is the only event they had, and then of course Invicta coming up this weekend. But then next week they've got Alaska Fighting Championships 138, and then Glory, the Super Fight Series next Saturday night, and then April 6th they have Titan FC 49. So there is a ton of MMA action the next couple weeks there on UFC Fight Pass. So I do want to mention this question that we got. From Dwayne Barth on who tweeted at me, which of course is at Jason_Floyd. He says this: Luke Thomas this week shared a perspective that Mayweather in the UFC is being advanced and in many circles applauded and encouraged, and is a ominous sign that MMA is broken. The talent vacuum is being filled with nonsense that contributed to the demise of Japanese MMA. I am very rarely in agreement with Luke, but on this analysis, I feel he is on point. Do you agree? And is there also a dangerous opinion among many that the UFC and Bellator are too big to fail?
Well, first off, I don't think UFC and Bellator are... Well, what does he mean by too big to fail?
I mean, I would guess that the walls fall in. I mean, UFC is not going anywhere. Yeah. I mean, you look at the amount of revenues they come in there. You know, Bellator, I don't think Bellator is going anywhere. Bellator faces a lot of challenges that the UFC just doesn't face. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier in the podcast, and you mentioned the point, the fact of, every time, when a guy walks to a gym and makes that decision, he wants to be an MMA fighter, he doesn't sit there and say, I want to be a Bellator fighter. He says, I want to be the UFC champion. So that's kind of the battles that Bellator goes out there. But, you look at the Mayweather stuff and whether anything ultimately comes about it, but I think the part that we have in MMA, and we've talked about this a lot of times, and is the fact of how the UFC and Bellator have just struggled to create fighters that people will go out of their way to watch.
Yeah, that has to be the priority. And to answer Dwayne's question, I agree with that sentiment to an extent, to a major extent, actually. That when your priority is freak show fights, you are on a very bad trajectory, because you are putting on so many fight cards per year, and when you put all your eggs in the basket of freak show fights, you can't replicate that every single week, and you can't replicate that on every pay-per-view. And once you begin to do that, you really devalue the value – the system of producing fighters based on talent. Just thinking back not too long ago, it felt like any guy who was a UFC lightweight champion or who was a UFC champion in general for a long period of time, for two or three title defenses, when it was just lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, had they maintained that title for three title defenses, I feel like they would be a star. And that's just not the case anymore. For some guys, they can have 10 title defenses and still not be a star. Not looking at you, Demetrius Johnson. So it's important to get your priorities straight and for them to really value talent, promoting from within, because I like the way he worded it when he said freak show fights, stuff like that, contributed to the decline of Japanese MMA or even Japanese combat sports with kickboxing. I think that's definitely not the biggest reason, but to say it contributed is definitely true. But it's worth noting with that in mind that there is great value in promoting the occasional freak show fight. KSW in Poland does it more than occasionally, but it does work really well for them. Moving forward, I think Ryzen Fighting Championships may have some success promoting freak show fights. The UFC should look to do it only on a rare occasion, and when it comes to being in the Floyd Mayweather business, I think the UFC should look elsewhere. Will the fight dominate the headlines for the day? Yes. But I don't think it will pay off when it comes to the way it hurts your sport's reputation and takes away so much oxygen from your other fighters. And more importantly, it might just not pay off literally. You might be giving Floyd Mayweather so much damn money that you may find yourself in the red when it's all said and done.
Look, I saw this piece on MMAJunkie.com, and you know, and part of it to me was clickbait. Part of me was it was about social media engagement, but the headline was, forget CM Punk, Conor McGregor, Nick Newell is perfect UFC opponent for Floyd Mayweather, and this was written by Simon Hebb. This is my, and when I saw this, I was like, oh my gosh, seriously, we're writing this? Like, as a writer, how about you be realistic in your writing? If you think Floyd Mayweather is coming to the UFC to fight Nick Newell, you have lost your mind. He is only coming to the UFC to fight Conor McGregor.
Yeah, there's the incentive is simple. Make money. Only one fight's going to make enough money to pay off whatever it costs to get Floyd under contract, and it's against McGregor. Is it going to happen? I don't know. I hope to God it doesn't, but I will be honest that I feel like there is a whole lot of momentum for that to take place, which kind of sucks. It really does suck that Conor's next fight in this sport is going to be against a guy who's an amateur at MMA.
Oh, yeah. It's going to happen, and it'll be the biggest thing in MMA combat sports.
It will.
Whenever it does happen.
It will, though. That's the sad part, is it still will be the biggest pay-per-view in combat sports next year. Probably. Although maybe, you know, I tell you what. You do Conor Floyd on pay-per-view in MMA. Canelo Golovkin 2. I think that number is going to be closer than people think. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong here. But I think people fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you.
Look,
that may be the act.
I will go out of my way to watch GGG Canelo 2. Even after, you know, not agreeing with how the scores were read the first time, I will still go out of my way to watch it. And, I mean, look, you do Conor Floyd in the UFC cage, it'll be one of the biggest sports events of the year.
You know what? Yeah, the more I think about it, Conor Floyd's going to be number one. Because you know what the draw is with Mayweather for so many people? Is they want to see him get his ass kicked.
Oh, no question.
That's what people want to see.
He's landed this perfectly where 50% of the people want to see him win, and 50% of people want to see him get knocked out. He's winning either way.
Yeah, I'm stupid. That's going to do 4 million buys.
let me ask, you know, you speak about, you know, kind of, you know, star levels, and maybe this is just me not knowing it. I saw this article from Damon Martin earlier this week where the tweet was, UFC heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic has added another big endorsement deal, this time with Cub Cadet. I had to Google Cub Cadet to see who they were.
Yeah.
Is this wrong of me not to know who they are?
No, I don't know who they are either. I'm looking. It's lawnmowers. That's cool. Oh, maybe that just means you're an elite in Florida where you just hire somebody to cut your lawn.
No,
and you don't know.
I cut my own yard, man.
Yeah. No, I've never heard of Cub Cadet.
I was like, maybe I'm just out of the loop and this is some, maybe it's a huge company in Ohio, but I was like, never heard of you.
Yeah. When the first syllable out of your mouth was a K, I was so worried you're going to say Condom Depot, but Cub Cadets is.
Is Condom Depot still around?
I mean, look, man, if you're going to buy condoms, I'm not going to buy condoms from Condom Depot. I don't know. There's this image of just all these condoms thrown around in this big, like, warehouse, and they just pick them off. Like, I don't know. Not that I buy condoms or use them, you know.
Condom Depot is around. I just Googled. They are around.
They got a 4.7 rating, so I want to – you know what's the worst part about Condom Depot is you Google it and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of the first 10 pictures are pictures of MMA fighters wearing it. And Condom Depot has been around since 1996, which is 1 year after I was born. So,
you can buy a 100 condom sampler.
Who needs a 100 condom sampler?
For $25.
I mean, yeah. No, you can save $20. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is for $25. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess it has. I guess maybe I should buy. Can we get a deal with Condom Depot?
I'll have my ad people reach out to them.
We'll promote that. We'll promote the top selling lube. Yeah. Yeah. Condom Depot. That's cool. Now that's in our Google web history. Wow. This is every condom has a 5-star review, but somehow Trojan Magnum condoms has 3 out of 5. Wow. Crazy.
Yeah, but I saw that with CPA. I was like, man, maybe I'm just out of the loop. Maybe this is some huge company, but, we'll see. You know, the filming of the Ultimate Fighter wrapped up 2 weeks ago. So it debuts, it's here beginning of April or middle of April? It's coming up here very soon. So, I've seen some people thinking like, oh, this is going to be a great season. And look, the fights may be great, but. I don't know if people are going to tune in.
Yeah, I know they're not. So that's definitely not going to happen.
The last season of The Ultimate Fighter, I barely watched, and its title was on the line.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. It's been since Kimbo Slice that people have cared about The Ultimate Fighter, which has been what, Ultimate Fighter season 10.
Yeah, and that was that the last year they were on Spike?
God, that must have been, if not right up there.
No, they were on Spike a little longer than that.
Yeah, because the more I think about it,
the Colton Smith season on Spike?
Yeah, I feel like The Ultimate Fighter meant nothing when they made the move to Fox.
No.
I felt like we were already talking about how The Ultimate Fighter was dead.
I think The Ultimate Fighter 17, which was Sonnen and Jones, I want to say was the first season on it was FX.
So, not the case.
Yeah, Carwin Johnson was – no, they did The Ultimate Fighter live. I'm wrong here. Actually, the last season was the Mayhem Miller-Michael Bisping season.
Oh, God.
Season 14.
Man, poor Mayhem.
That was 2011, by the way.
Jesus. Back when, not too long before, when they were doing that stupid show with Mayhem Miller, Bully Beatdown.
Oh, yeah. God, I remember that one.
Wasn't
Frankie Yeager a part of that season?
I'm pretty confident Eddie Alvarez was.
No, it was Eddie Alvarez. That's right. By the way, speaking of Frankie Yeager, he's going to fight April 21st, 49 days after being knocked out by Brian Ortega. I don't know. I have a lot of questions on why this fight's happening.
Okay, what are your questions?
First off, okay, so he got a 45-day suspension. So we're 4 days after that suspension expired. He has no contact until April 3rd, I believe it is. So, God knows, he's already in contact. I just like, I think, you look at it from the UFC aspect of why rush Frankie in there after being knocked out for the first time in his career where he literally got lifted off his feet.
Okay. So your question
and why this rematch against Cub Swanson after how the first fight went?
Well, not a great fight. What else is on this fight card so far?
Well, your main event's Edson Barboza versus Kevin Lee. To me, this would be, I have to think this is a sign ticket sales are not going well. And they think by putting Frankie on, that's going to booster him.
That, to me, is the answer. And you already answered it on Twitter. I mean, you basically said it, but...
I mean, this is the thing, like, what if Cub knocks him out?
Well, dude, think about the last guy we had this conversation about, Michael Bisping. What happened? He fought Kelvin Gastelum way too short notice, got knocked out. And this is different. Edgar got straight up knocked out instead of the GSP fight where Bisping got rocked severely. There's a good chance Edgar gets knocked out in like the first round. And if he does,
if that does happen, there will be a lot of finger pointing, I think, at the commission, at the UFC, and at Frankie Edgar's camp. I mean, look, Frankie's a fighter. You know Frankie wants a fight. But I look at this and I just say, like, if you're in Team Edgar, what's the rush to get back in there so quick?
Oh man, I have the payday. It has to be the payday.
Yeah, I feel uncomfortable about this.
Yeah, I do too. But also, like, you gotta understand from their perspective, Jason. They are so eating their. They believe in themselves so much that their thought that there isn't a thought of trepidation in this camp. I mean, they have to be so uber confident about their ability to come in, get a victory, get a payday, move on, and get the taste of defeat out of their mouth. I don't think they have that sense of perspective of what's actually happened here. You have a guy who got knocked out who shouldn't be training for over a month, but that's not the way they're probably looking at it, Jason. They're probably looking at it like, we can come in here and we can out-wrestle Cub Swanson and we can win. And Edgar's career is ticking, so we need to take advantage of it. I don't think that's justified. I'm just saying that's probably what the perspective is. And again, he's not supposed to train until when? Like 3 days before the fight happens?
2 weeks before the fight.
Yeah, he's training tonight.
Oh, of course he is. The whole no contact thing, like, there cannot be a commission out there that truly thinks that you know, the fire is going to honor that. I mean, come on, you know, let's be honest about that. You know, there's no way a commission truly believes that. By the way, speaking of commissions, I can tell you this, the out of competition drug testing for Bellator 200 has begun. David Rickles, has already, his results have come back and he came back negative. So he came back clean. So, there is a bunch of out of competition testing going on for Bellator 200.
There you go. That's good. That's good. I'm glad you're in the loop on all this, and I'm glad that that's happened, because that is a fight card where there are plenty of questions about the fighters on it.
I will tell you this, man. There's not much talk about old Mirko Krokop since last week.
They must have listened to our podcast and just turned it down.
I did get some phone calls. I did get some phone calls. I was at Disney World on Thursday and Friday, and I got a couple phone calls about our podcast.
Did you just go to Disney World by yourself?
No. Me and my wife were there with our nieces.
Oh. I wish you would just go by yourself and just ride the rides, and you have like a fast pass. And
dude, I'm telling you, man, it is amazing. Like, I was sitting there as we were driving. We were driving on Friday into Magic Kingdom, and in my head I'm going, God, how much money does Disney World make every day? It's $22 just to park.
They make enough money to pay people to dress up in hot, do stupid costumes all day. So
there was one part that, like, there was a parade going on. So, we were standing there with our nieces, and, that was one of my thoughts of, like, the people that are in the character outfits, like, do, like, they have, like, you know, some type of water on their neck or something to try to keep themselves warm in this Florida heat?
I feel like they have to have some type of air conditioning device in there that's super quiet. Because, yeah, how do you just not see Mickey Mouse pass out on the ground at 2 o'clock in the day?
Oh, man, I don't know.
That's how fighters do their weight cut.
But man, it was amazing to me how packed it was. Just amazing.
I'm not.
I had a great time. Nice to kind of get away for a couple days and not really have to worry about anything. It's always a good thing. Man. You know, like my friends are like texting me about my bracket's busted. I'm like, I really don't care about bracket. Really don't care.
Yeah, as opposed to every other year where your bracket is perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Every year you hear that same thing. But March Madness is going on. But we're going to start to kind of wrap things up here. Going to have the final interview here of this week's podcast. Going to hear from Tyson Nam, who's going to be the main event of Fight Nights Global 86 on April the 1st. I had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about his upcoming matchup. Back on the show is Tyson Nam, who once again has another fight booked. It's been a while since we've seen Tyson, so looking forward to seeing his fight coming up here on April the 1st, Fight Nights Global. Tyson, as always, I appreciate time. Before we talk about your fight, I got to ask you, what's your thoughts of your teammates Ricky Simone's mullet?
I love it. It's different. Sometimes if I get upset, there's something for me to pull on, so... I don't mind it at all. If he likes it, he enjoys it. I mean, it's been his good luck charm. So don't cut that thing off.
Do you think you could pull off the mullet?
No, hell no. I can't pull off that mullet. My lines are too clean.
But I mentioned it's been a while since we've seen you back in October of last year. I know you wanted to get back in there quicker. Do you try to look at the positives of what you've been able to do over the past couple months as opposed to, hey, man, the negative of, God, I just want to get back in there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, like the first maybe like 2 months, I'm just itching to get something signed and get something going. And then after that, it's kind of like, okay, maybe it's just my it was probably good for my body to just heal up just because I'm a little bit older, but at the same time, yeah, I'm just always itching to get back in. Otherwise, I ain't got much going on. I'm just twiddling my thumbs up over here, just waiting for someone to beat up.
I noticed another interview you did. You talked about the what happened at the weigh-ins, your last fight. Because of that, did that fight become personal to you?
A little bit. I've never really had someone put their hands on my throat at a weigh-in before. And already I was a little bit fired up just because, you know, it's just me and Ricky up in a brand new place that we've never been before. And then when someone puts their hands on top of me, oh, it's go time.
And talking about going to new places, this fight in Kazakhstan. I know you're fighting at a club, I believe I've been in Russia. You know, and obviously it's a different culture. What really has been like the culture shock to you when you gone over to Russia to fight?
You know, not much of a culture shock. I've been to different countries, so I always like learning about different people's cultures. So, you know, I'm definitely not one. I'm a little bit more open minded about how people live, but you know, when I'm traveling over, I'm the crazy one. Okay, so everybody better watch out where I'm going to beat someone up.
Yeah, because you're coming in and you're the guy that, you know, the fans in the arena most likely are not going to like. Is that kind of a motivation type thing for you?
I love it. I love it when I hear boos and, you know, dirty looks. But usually, you know, even though I beat up their guy, I mean, I win a couple fans over just because I bring entertainment to the stadium and to the fans. I don't put on no boring show. I want to knock somebody out, and that's what the fans love to see.
Of course, looking for your third knockout win in a row here. Let me ask this: do you know how to say your opponent's name?
No, but I would like to try. Zalgaz Zumagilov. I mean, that's the best that I can do. He probably has a hard time saying my name, so it's okay. Where?
Yeah, Zalgas was going to be the way I went with the first name, but you know, he's 10-3 in his career. I mean, was this guy even on your radar before getting the fight offer?
I've looked through the entire roster, so it's not going to be a surprise if they match me up with anybody. And when I did see that he wanted to fight me, then yeah, I mean, if he thinks he's better than me, then let me go over there and let me shut his face.
Do you take that as a sign of disrespect when a guy thinks he can beat you, or are you just like, hey man, he's a competitor just like me. He thinks he can beat anybody.
Yeah, no disrespect. I mean, even at the after the fight is done, yeah, you shake hands, but leading up into it, I mean, it's competition at its finest, you know, man to man or woman to woman, hand to hand. So, and with that pure competition just really excites me to do my best and do what I do best, you know, put people out.
How do you assess him as an opponent?
Say that again.
How do you assess him as an opponent?
He's all right. I mean, I've been doing this for about 11 to 12 years, so he's not going to throw something at me that I've never seen. I mean, he punches, he kicks, he tries to wrestle people, but I've seen a lot better than that level of competition in the practice room. You know, I've practiced with guys that have been in the big shows, UFC, Bellator, just to name a few. So it's not like he's going to throw something at me that I won't be prepared for.
You know, obviously you've been on a great, role here, you know, unbeaten in your last five fights. Is there anything you would want the fans to know about you of where you're at this point in your career as opposed to, you know, other points of your career?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've been rejuvenated moving back here to my home in Hawaii. I'm moving better. I'm moving faster. I'm getting stronger. I mean, it's really weird. I'm 34, but I feel like I'm still like in my mid 20s. I'm still getting better and still growing in this sport. I always knew that I was I'm a pretty late bloomer. So I think right now is where you'll see me make a run wherever I'm going.
In terms of being rejuvenated, being back in Hawaii, is there anything you can point to?
I don't know. Jumping into salt water. I mean, living up in Oregon, I mean, you have a coast, but I dip my toe up in that thing and it sends shivers right through my entire body. So at least up here in the Pacific, I can jump in from head to toe and not freeze up or get hypothermia.
Now, are you finishing up your camp in the U.S.?
Yes, I'm for my last three fights, I've done it all here in Hawaii. I got everything that I need. I got the beautiful weather. I mean, the food is a little bit too good, so that's why I got people helping me out. One of my sponsors, Clean Eats, to help me get that weight down, just because okay. I'm so big for the weight class that I need extra help for just to make that weight so that I can compete.
You know, how tough of a cut is it for you?
It's pretty tough. We'll say it's. We'll say that I'm always probably one of the worst, if not the worst looking one at the weigh-ins.
Do you think at all you're getting to a point where, you know, maybe it's time to move back to 35?
Not just yet. I like the feel. Well, the feeling is really bad just making the weight, but it really helps to keep me disciplined during training where, you know, I can't have that ice cream or that that soda. So I actually come in better shape and healthier at 25. So as long as that I can make it, I mean, I really like the advantage of being the bigger opponent come fight night.
Now, when you get back from this fight, you get back to Hawaii, is there a go-to ice cream that you gotta partake in?
Everything and anything. Everything tastes good. Like right now, I mean, just some potato chips sounds awesome. So, let alone ice cream. Oh my goodness,
that is unfortunately the fighter's life. When you can just sit there and think about some of those foods. You're not the type of fighter that when you're going through a weight cut, like you're watching food channels, right?
No, I'm just trying to concentrate. I'm trying to not snap at anybody. So yeah, I like to keep to myself. I like to just do what I need to do and think about beating up my opponent the next day. That's all.
And of course your fight here is April 1st. They're in Kazakhstan at Fight Night Global. Tyson, as always, I appreciate time, and let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah. Following me up on Instagram. I think it's Namino11. Twitter, plain old simple, Tyson Nam. Check me out. Follow my story.
And there was my conversation with Tyson Nam. Look forward to seeing his matchup there in the main event of Fight Nights Global 86. Let you know, coming up here on the MMAReport.com this week, going to have several interviews going to be putting out there. One of those interviews will be with John Sweeney. He's got a fight coming up on Saturday at 864 Fighting Championship. He's going to be taking on Keith Lee. Of course, that is the brother of Kevin Lee. Also coming up this week on the MMAReport.com, going to have interviews with Kevin Seiler, Evan Solario, Danny Ramirez. So look for those interviews later on this week on the MMAReport.com. So going to have plenty of content up there. Of course, this podcast comes out every Wednesday. Danny, you got any big plans this weekend?
Oh, man. Any big plans this weekend? I don't know. I'm just going to go and work the Saturday Rio Grande Valley Vipers game. It's the last game of the regular season. And I'm going to cross my fingers that we get a home game in the playoffs, because they are almost in the playoffs. They just need one more win. But there's a good chance that we don't get any home games, because the way the NBA G League works now, basically, it is a one-game playoff until the finals. And it's really just whichever team has the best record. Yeah, they really cut down on the postseason. So there's a good chance it's the last game of the year. Yeah, it absolutely is. But that's the case. So yeah, that's my big plan, Jason. And then early on, it's going to be interesting to see how we record this podcast, probably a bit later in the day. But on Tuesday – oh, no, it's on Wednesday. Never mind. Who cares? But next Wednesday, I'm going to be up early at like 6 or 5 a.m. because I'm working a soccer game, a USL soccer game that's a kids game, and it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. So you got to wake up early to set the broadcast and do all that. So not looking forward to that, but I'll probably watch some MMA between LFA and Invicta.
Yeah, plenty of things going on. Of course, I'll be watching a little March Madness on Thursday night, see if the Noles can somehow make it to the Elite Eight. Don't know if that's necessarily going to happen, taking on Gonzaga. God, you know, can Noles play at a decent hour, please?
What time are they playing at?
Like 10:30 on Thursday night.
At night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude, what's crazy is there's like four games on. There's like four. They only have four games to figure it out. To be fair, it's like 9 o'clock for a meet, so I don't care.
Like last Friday night, they were the late game in Nashville, and the game before them just went on. I think they didn't tip off till like 11 o'clock.
Jesus.
I'm sitting here just like, after being at Disney World all day, I'm like sitting on the couch, like not trying to fall asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, by the time your game starts, I'll already know whether or not the Aggies are going to the Elite Eight. We're taking on Michigan. So, yeah,
it's definitely been a weird year in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah,
but,
look at the Sweet 16 for that day. Literally, the highest seed is Michigan at 3, 3, 4, 5, 7, 7, 9, 9, and 11. That's your one. That's one half of your Sweet 16 right there.
It's like I was listening to sports radio the other day, and Dan Patrick was like, you've got basically college football powers playing in the college basketball tournament that are not normally college basketball powers. But yeah, looking forward to that. But of course, we'll be back next week for another edition of the MMA Report podcast. Coming on next week's podcast, we'll be joined by John Castaneda, who is going to be returning to competition on April 13th at Combates America. We'll talk to him about his experience of being in that one-night tournament that Combates America did last year, and the rematch that he has coming up here on the April the 13th card. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Jets trade moving up to number 3. What does it mean? Well, everybody says we're moving up for a quarterback. Well, yeah, that's pretty common knowledge that they have an interest and likely doing so. But what does it mean when you move up this early? Well, you better be certain, and I'm going to make the assumption that the Jets are certain that they've got three guys that they would be very comfortable in taking at the third spot, and probably three of the quarterbacks. Okay. And here's why you have to go under that premise. I'm certain they like them in order A, B, C, but you better be prepared to have to take C, because A may be gone. And even though you don't know what's going to happen the second pick, and you might think it is unlikely that a team might do this or that. You've opened yourself up to be jumped by someone to take your guy if you only got two guys that you really like. So by moving to three, you've got to be comfortable with any one of three.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.